Welcome to our business lunch hour with the Money Guests, a restaurant that's a Chicago treasure, and the latest numbers from Wall Street to LaSalle Street. I'm Bob Surratt.
And I'm Marianne Marciano.
And on the phone with us, Rachel Bello, who is part of a feature we're going to do here every week called Money and Meaning. Hi, Rachel.
How are you guys?
Hi there.
We're curious. I want to know the meaning of money and meaning. What does this mean? What is this all about?
Well, this is the future of business, Bob. Money and meaning is really what makes for the big payoff, which is the name of our weekly radio show on WGN. It is what entrepreneurs have always known, which is, in the end, it's not just about money. It's about what it means in a larger sense. So beyond making your customers happy and selling to the marketplace, what are you really after? What are you really about? And entrepreneurs have always had an ambition to change your life by selling you this X, whatever it is. Millennials, the younger generation, now only want products that have some meaning associated with it, some way that this product is going to make the world a better place.
I know you went to Harvard, so I'm trusting you here, Rachel. Tell me what you...
They don't teach this at Harvard, I can tell you right now.
Why?
What do they teach instead?
What they teach is really, really basic about money. Now, it's true that at the business school now they actually have a whole social enterprise unit because this is taking fire everywhere. I mean, in Chicago at 1871, the, you know, central address of entrepreneurship, they get hundreds of applications from what are called impact entrepreneurs. That is, entrepreneurs who operate for profit, but they want to be doing something that makes the world a better place.
So when you're not doing this, talking about it on the radio, what occupies your time?
Well, we do have clients. Suzanne and I do have clients. We've always had clients. We've had companies who are clients where we help them understand both what their central point of view is on the world and why they are important to making the world better, but also how they take that point of view to the marketplace so they can make money. We don't forget about money. Money is really important, and in the end, we want you to impress your investor, impress your marketplace, and have something to show for it.
So what you're saying is that you take people who are at the point of their lives where they want to give back? Is that what you're saying?
No, that's sort of the old formulation, Marianne. It's like we don't, you know, the next generation and the future of business, we don't wait to make money to give back. It's about embedding that in your product now. So if you think about products like Whole Foods or Tom's Shoes or even the original, you know, Newman's Own, right? These products all embed in the core proposition as a brand the meaning of the brand. Now, Newman's gives away all the profits, which we don't subscribe to as a revenue model, but basically, they're a hugely successful suite of products that gives away all the money to disadvantaged camps. Tom's Shoes says, we'll sell you a pair of shoes, and for every pair of shoes you buy, another pair goes to a disadvantaged person in the third world. Wildly popular, first with college campuses and now everywhere.
So I can name, you know, maybe with, you know, one hand, maybe two hands, companies that do that, and you just named all the ones that came to my mind immediately, but are people who are really struggling to get a business going, who do not have the ability to, for example, go to 1871 and get all this, you know, help? I mean, is everybody doing this? Is that what you're saying, that this is the new way
everybody
of thinking?
What
is the advantage to them?
That's a great question. Two great questions, actually, embedded in one. So everybody should be thinking about this, because in the end, if money is your only goal, you're actually selling yourself short and selling your product short. So we always encourage everyone, because our listeners on The Big Payoff are the everyday entrepreneurs who are sitting at their kitchen table wanting to start a muffin company, wanting to start a candle, you know, shop, something. And we always spend time with them saying, who are you? What makes you passionate? what's going to drive you for the rest of the life of this company and inspire others? Let's put our fingers on that. Let's get to the why, the big why. And then we can talk practically about, okay, now who's the marketplace? What's the price point? Well, who are your competitors? What's your distribution strategy? But we don't like talking tactics related to money before we put our fingers on the why, because that is what is going to drive you. That's what's going to inspire your marketplace to find you and choose you over somebody else.
So what this is all about and what you're talking about is a bit of altruism in business today, isn't it? And it's also good business.
Exactly. That's the point. That's why we put them together in a braid. It's not altruism as a favor to anybody. It's a core business tenet. If you don't know why you're doing it, and if your why doesn't go beyond just pleasing your customer, you're not in the future of business. The future of business demands that you talk about your products and make it authentic in a bigger way, a bigger meaning. It doesn't have to be feeding starving babies in Africa. It can be something that's meaningful to you.
So is this replacing what used to be the going thought in business, large and small, basically a charitable donation is something that the accountant is going to want to see at tax time, and it looks and it's good for us, and now it's gone way beyond that, hasn't it?
I totally agree. I mean, that whole model is very last generation, and it isn't interesting to today's consumers and certainly not to tomorrow's consumers. They want to see how your product is either made. Is it eco-friendly? Or what are you doing with your profits? They want to see that transparency. They demand that transparency now in a way that simply wasn't the case when I was coming up.
So this is a brand new way to think. This is a philosophical concept, actually. So what are people supposed to do now with that information?
That's great. Well, the first thing they're supposed to do is tune in to WGN.FM every Tuesday at 11 o'clock Central. And we interview entrepreneurs and talk to them about what makes their businesses great. And by the way, not only entrepreneurs who are explicitly, you know, like, quote, impact entrepreneurs, we interview Chicago-based entrepreneurs who really get it and whose businesses are really succeeding. We interview investors. And we talk to them about what they're doing and how the listener can get certain lessons right from what they're saying.
Rachel, you know what? This all makes me think of looking at the Ben & Jerry's package, the ice cream carton, years and years ago, and then finding out about what they were doing beyond business. And I guess as a customer, that makes you want to patronize that business, that company, and in that case,
that's a perfect
their ice
example.
Cream and feel good about their ice cream, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It's an interesting.
They were sort of hippies, but yeah.
Yeah. It's well, that made it even better. Interesting topic, Rachel Bellow. It's money and meaning, and I think the meaning leads you to some money. That's the lesson there. Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate it. Talk to you down the road. Rod and Marciano, business lunching with you today, and hashtag this is what we call our segment, where we kind of go over what's trending in the social media department, and somebody who knows that is, who knows the answer to that question, who knows what's trending, Red Eye Web editor Jordan Schultz. Jordan, welcome. Good to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
What's hot today?
Oh, gosh, we've got a whole ton of things. We've got Facebook. We've got Twitter. Facebook's talking Ebola, Afghanistan, Rupert Murdoch.
Wait, why is Facebook talking Ebola today?
Well, it looks like the U.S. is about to spend about $1 billion to combat the virus in Liberia.
Okay. And then what did you say? Twitter is.
And then Twitter, we've got eBay spinoff and PayPal. We've got some British politics. They're going through some elections right now. And then finally, our Secret Service is trying to go through some changes to make sure that nobody's breaking into the White House anymore.
Yeah, nobody's walking in the front door and just, you know, helping themselves to whatever they want in the kitchen.
What does it say about the people who are after these stories? I mean, is there any way to tell who, why these things are trending today?
Absolutely. You know, with Facebook and Twitter, the audiences tend to be a bit more general. We see lots of folks on Facebook. It seems about, 66% of online adults use Facebook. That's when you're seeing sort of the big news stories of the day. However, Twitter seems to be a little bit more nuanced. And so you start to get... Also, we should talk about, too, like Facebook, it depends on who's using it, who's reading it. Your trending stories are going to be different across users. For me, I like a good breadth of news. Twitter, however, is a little bit more organic. And so you start to see things that pop up in other countries. And that's why, for example, we're getting British elections.
So Twitter, a lot of people use it more almost like a news service to figure out what it is that people are talking about and what's in the news, and they comment about that. But it seems like with Facebook, people are sharing pictures of their family outing or
it's completely
it
dependent on what you're sharing and who you're talking to, what you're getting in terms of trending news. So if I am, for example, I'm a 26-year-old male and I'm getting things that are, I happen to have interests that are a little bit more educated, that are a little bit more business savvy, but some of my counterparts, for example, aren't sharing that type of information on Facebook. They might be sharing something about trending music videos or the latest in pop culture. They're going to start to get that trending news on their accounts.
How is it determined then what is trending, since it's so personal based on whoever it is?
You know, if every news organization could determine that, they would be millionaires. There's a lot of factors that go into it. It comes from popularity. It comes from general news. It comes from news organizations. Also what you're sharing yourself and who you're talking to and what type of celebrities and news organizations you're interacting with.
I notice on your list of what's trending today tends to be topical news stories on Facebook and Twitter. But then if you look at LinkedIn and Pinterest, It's different. They're things from left field, aren't
certainly
they?
Yeah, you know, Pinterest, the funny thing about my Pinterest account, that's a very nuanced thing, just like Facebook. It depends on who you're interacting with. But with Pinterest, I don't use it that often. So what I'm getting is very generic popular news for its targeted audience, which happens to be primarily female. About 33% of online females, online adults are using Pinterest. Or I guess I should say 33% of online females are using Pinterest compared to only 8% of men, online men. So it's a lot of, you know, for example, the top story right now is pregnancy hormone is reducing some multiple sclerosis symptoms. They're saying that about if you induce a hormone called estrol into multiple sclerosis treatment, you're cutting relapses of MS by 47%. Clearly something that's pertinent to a female audience.
Right. And LinkedIn, though, I always thought that's the business meetup, social media.
Certainly.
There's apparently much more to it than I wasn't aware of.
So trending is very difficult to determine on LinkedIn because, again, it's so nuanced to your target audience. For me, it's pushing back popular articles such as emotional intelligence, things about toxic beliefs that will ruin your career. It's very nascent for me, but it's also very different for someone like the two of you or folks like the two of you.
In what way?
It would just, again, much like Facebook, it would be determined by what you're sharing and who you're interacting with. Since I have recently entered the marketplace in the last 6 years, I'm probably getting a lot of articles about how to improve my career, whereas the two of you, who probably have been in the industry a little bit longer, are getting advice on how to do your job better.
Oh, every minute we are, as a matter of fact. It's the world of digital journalism.
And not
Jordan,
just on social media.
Jordan Schultz from Red Eye. Appreciate the update.
Awesome. Thank you, Jordan.
What would a business lunch hour be without food? And does this put you in the mood, Marianne?
Yes, one of our favorite places, Bob.
Yes. This is a local business that is a Chicago treasure. They've been around, I think it's 43 years now. It was started by Gus Kuschel, and he's with us today. It's all about the Greek Islands. Gus, good to see you.
Good to see you. Good to be here. Thank you.
Congratulations on 43 years in the restaurant business. What's the average lifespan of a restaurant in Chicago? About 20 minutes?
I don't know. I don't know. Altogether, I'm in the restaurant business all my life, 70 years.
Good for you. And you started in 1971. And actually, I remember the original Greek Islands restaurant right Jackson, over the expressway, right?
Jackson, yes.
On the ramp there on
correct,
Jackson.
Correct.
And then you moved to the current location, 200 South Halsted, in 1982, where you've been ever since. And over the years, I've read various articles about the history of Greek food and Chicago and where the flaming cheese started and where how gyros started. Do you know anything about this? What were you responsible for, Gus?
Well, I tell you, like you say, we came over the Greek neighborhood about 44 years ago, okay? And when we get there, it was a couple restaurants before us. And flame cheese start here in Chicago. We put the flame. As cheese, we serve the Greek. The flame cheese in Greece, but not with the flame. Okay,
that's purely a Chicago deal.
Exactly. Yes.
So yeah. You serve it, you flame it, but then in Greece, but then you don't serve it with the flame.
No. We didn't flame in Greece. Oh, just cook that.
And how did it come to be that you did that in Chicago?
A waiter dropped a cigarette in a plate of cheese. It caught on fire, and that was history. No, what happened, really? How did that start?
You see, some waiters, I was working at French restaurants, and we do a lot of flambé dishes, okay? And people goes, they like that, okay? So somebody start and put a little alcohol. Actually, they didn't put alcohol. We put a little ouzo or a little cognac, okay, a little brandy, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's the way it start. But when we took over 44 years ago, it was established. It was there. Yes.
So what is better, ouzo or cognac?
Depends what people prefer.
Does it change the flavor of the cheese a lot?
I tell you this. People that I know, all customers, I suggest not to put any flame, nothing. Just lemon. It tastes better.
Well, that's a good thing you didn't experiment setting gyros on fire. Who knows what would have happened. And tell me about your trips to Greece. Because do you go every year?
Yes.
To the Greek islands?
Well, I tell you, I come from Greece, and I love Greece, and I go there, and I just travel a little bit and find a new recipes, new ingredients. And every year I find something that is suitable for the Greek island.
Like what do you bring back?
Oregano, honey, little peppercini, lima beans, and wines, and olive oil, extra virgin olive oil.
How much do you bring?
About 40 tons a year.
Oh,
how much?
40 tons a year.
They charge you for extra bags on the airline now. How do you do that?
It comes, with a container,
I hope so.
20 tons each time.
Do you sell any of the products or just use them?
We do.
You sell them? Because I'm going to go buy my ingredients from you.
A lot of customers, they come over and they ask for a little olive oil. We have displayed there, little oregano. Some olives, we do have. Yes.
Gus, how do you, now, as we mentioned, you've been at this 43 years there, and there wasn't that much in Greek town. It wasn't even much of a Greek town when you opened. But now with all the restaurants, with all the competition, what's your secret to continuing success?
Well, I always, a secret, it's the ingredients. We buy the best that we sell on the market. And good service and consistency, we cook the same thing for 30 years at least, okay?
I think it's done by now.
Gus, I have a question. So Bob and I went to the Greek islands years ago, and we were Bob's...
Are you talking about the restaurant or the Greek islands in Greece?
No, the Greek islands in Greece. We go to the Greek islands restaurant on a regular basis, but we actually went to the Greek islands for the first time many years ago. And Bob, one of Bob's favorite dishes is pasticcio.
Yeah.
And we would go from one restaurant to the other, and nobody makes it because it takes a long time. And then you find one restaurant that has the pasticcio, and then everybody gets it from that one. Is that a very tough dish to make?
Yeah, why is it so hard to get over there and not here?
No, it's not hard dish to make, no. No, it's, as a matter of fact, it's easy dish to make.
They just don't eat it as much over there as over here, I guess. And that's the case with many ethnic foods. You know, it's when it's Americanized, it's a little different, isn't it?
I tell you the truth. A lot of customers, our customers visit Greece and they come back from Greece. And most of them, not all of them, but most of them, they tell us the same thing. How come your food is better than the one we have in Greece?
And why is that?
It's the ingredients. You got to use the best quality of meat because it's a lot of ground meat in the pasticcio, okay? And you have to do, and cheese, the same thing with the cheese. You know, you make the bechamel sauce, you know, on top of that. It makes the difference.
Well, yes. I think the difference is Gus. It's Gus Kuchel, and and Barbara's here too. Welcome, and thank you very much for coming in and giving us a few samples of the food here. And it's no wonder why the Greek Islands is always named one of the best Greek restaurants in America, and it truly is a Chicago treasure there at 200 South Halsted. And it's every time I'm in there, Gus, I always think about being in that little place where you used to be on Jackson back starting in 1971.
A lot of people miss that, but fortunately we lost the the lease, and we have to move.
You got a lot more room now.
That's for sure.
And continued success to you. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Gus.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. One more thing, Gus. Opa! Just set the microphone on fire. Business lunching with you today. By the way, Gus says that gyros started in this country too. In Greece, they didn't know anything about that. Who knew?
Yeah, I think that there's just a completely different menu. It's like Greek food and then Greek American food.
By the way, out in the burbs, you can go to the Greek islands in Lombard as well. With us now is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Commerce in Chicago, Teresa Minnell. Teresa, good to have you on the program.
Hi, Teresa.
Thanks. Good morning.
And you're here to present us with the key to the city. No, I guess not.
That would be my former boss.
Oh, okay. All right. There's some big doings. Tell us about the Small Business Entrepreneur Expo.
Sure. Thanks for having me today. The Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce in early August launched its Small Business Chicago initiative, and we're very excited about this because well over 90% of all businesses in Illinois are small businesses, and more than half of our members are also small businesses. So we're doing an awful lot for them, including next week, five big programs that include everything from business networking, which is a little bit like speed dating, to some international programming, some talking about exports and talking about trends. So that's a big thing for us next week. But in addition to that, we also have one-on-one counseling. We do Success EDU. We do tech education. You name it. If a small business needs it, we have it.
Why is it beneficial for a small business to meet other small business people?
Because business-to-business connections are all about how they grow their business. We did a survey earlier this year, and well over 70% of our members, large corporations as well as the small and medium size, said that networking was one of their top priorities, and they wanted us to do more of it.
So if people are out there and they have a small business and they're thinking, this would be helpful to me, can they go, or do they have to be a member?
No, our programs are open to members and non-members, but we certainly like to invite people to become members, because if you're a member, that we open up a lot more opportunities for you as well.
What can folks expect if they participate in this expo?
If they participate next week in what we've got going on, they can expect to meet other businesses. They certainly can expect a lot of content that'll help them grow their small business. They certainly can also meet some larger businesses, which are great opportunities for them to become suppliers and to broaden their reach. And on the international side, we're hoping to be able to introduce them to some people who might be able to introduce them to the export world.
How do we compare to other cities? I mean, are we packed with people who want to be entrepreneurs, who want to start small businesses, or how do we rate?
We rank very high in that regard. Chicago has one of the most diverse economies in the country, and we are very reflective of the country as well as Illinois in terms of the number of small businesses that we have here. when you look at all the incubators that we have from 1871, which is technology, to several industrial incubators, you see an enormous amount of entrepreneurial activity here in Chicago, and we're trying to help make sure that we stay friendly and that there's a lot more here.
And with people no longer working at the same company for 50 years and getting a gold watch at the end of that, and people really changing their careers entirely every decade or so, what do you say to somebody who maybe in the back of their minds they think, wow, it would be really great to be able to buy this small business and grow it or to start something on my own, but I really have never been to school for that. I don't know what to do.
Well, that's the great thing about many of the programs that we offer, and the B2B networking is one of those. There's a lot of people who actually not only find additional business opportunities for themselves, but actually find some new ideas and might actually move into something else. Serial entrepreneurs are much like that. They might do something for a few years and then move into something entirely different, and we give people an opportunity to do that. But in addition, we give them tools. So, for example, there's a broad spectrum of financing opportunities in the market today. You no longer need to go to a traditional bank. We partner with a lot of traditional banks for small business lending, but there's crowdsourcing. There's a couple of other initiatives that we're working with right now. So from a financing perspective, from an education perspective, from a PR and marketing even, we give them opportunities to explore whatever their dream might be.
How much opportunity is there out there right now for minority businesses and minorities who maybe want to get into it? Hispanic, for example, African-American, any minority that wants to start something?
That's a great question, Marianne. There's actually a lot of opportunity in Chicago right now. We are a strategic partner with something called Chicago United, and they have a Five Forward initiative that we're helping our small businesses access. And basically what that is asking corporations located here in the Chicago region to make a commitment to doing business with five minority-owned firms. So that's a supply chain issue. That's helping them with the RFP process. But the overall commitment is just for minority firms. That's one of many programs we're working on. There's another one called the CASE Initiative, which is working with large institutions, education and medical institutions, where we're helping neighborhood businesses, small neighborhood businesses, develop capacity and to learn the RFP process.
What does that mean? Develop capacity and learn the RFP process.
Well, for example, on capacity, sometimes a small business might need a loan in order to be able to supply something as large as one of our medical centers, or they just might not know how you go about responding to a request for proposal. Or you might need a certain kind of insurance that you previously haven't had to carry. We help them walk through all of those steps so that they're in a position where when one of those large institutions actually reaches out for some sort of material they're looking for, we can actually help people be prepared to do that.
All right, what else do we need to know here about the Small Business Entrepreneur Expo other than it's Friday, UIC, Halstead and Roosevelt from 8:30 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon, and you've set up a website for all the latest information, chicagosmallbusinessexpo.com.
I think that we would like all the small businesses to know that it is open to them. There will be a host of people there, ourselves as well as strategic partners, the City of Chicago Treasurer's Office and others. And no matter what your interest or what your need, there will be somebody there that you can talk to and work with.
Sounds good. Teresa Middle, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Chicago Chamber of Commerce. They've been around 110 years. This is the first time they've had a female president.
This is true.
It's about time.
Wow,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks,
nice to see you.
Marianne.